Hi, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining today's press call on actions USDA is taking to further protect the U.S. livestock industry from the threat posed by highly pathogenic H5N1 avian influenza. In addition to Secretary Vilsack, Dr. Rosemary Sifford, Chief Veterinary Officer of the United States and Deputy Administrator of the Veterinary Services Program at APHIS, will be on hand during the question and answer sessions. With that, I will turn it over to Secretary Vilsack.
Alan, thank you, and thanks to everybody joining. I think it's fair to say that we have been confronted with a novel circumstance with the H5N1 virus in dairy cattle, which has impacted and affected animal health, intersects with our food supply, and always in situations like this involves the health and well-being of our farmers, their families, and farm workers, as well as public health. Over the course of the last several weeks, we have been engaged in a coordinated and collaborative effort with sister agencies in the federal government, the Food and Drug Administration, Center for Disease Control, and USDA. We've also been coordinating and communicating with state and local officials in terms of animal health, agricultural officials, as well as public health officials as well. This has been and continues to be a very complex circumstance and an evolving issue and an effort to try to respond in a way that I think protects the health of the American people, protects the safety of our food supply, reduces the risk to livestock and poultry, and treats this issue seriously and urgently. We've come together today to announce a series of actions, and I'll be focusing on the action that USDA is taking. Just four top lines, which I suspect you already have heard in previous briefings. Our testing to date shows pasteurization kills virus in milk. CDC continues to monitor, but has seen no increase in foodborne illnesses. The dairy cows that have gotten sick are recovering. We will do additional testing and precautions for animals in interstate commerce, which is what brings us to together today. And, of course, there will likely be increased testing and surveillance as this situation evolves over time. Let me just start by talking about the federal order which is being issued today. The federal order itself will be issued today, guidance from APHIS that will provide further detail will be published tomorrow, and the effective date of the federal order is Monday, April 29th. To further protect the U.S. livestock industry from any threat that could be posed by H5N1, we're issuing a federal order today that will require laboratories and state veterinarians to report to the USDA any cattle that test positive for avian flu or any type of influenza A. Any dairy cattle moving in interstate commerce must test for avian flu or type A influenza beforehand. No dairy cattle positive with avian flu. A virus can be moved interstate without conditions specified by APHIS in the guidance to be published tomorrow. And producers will be required in the event of a positive finding to provide and to cooperate with EPI and, investigations and movement tracing for herds with positive avian flu cases if they intend to move that cattle across state lines. Now, while USDA regulates interstate movement of animals affected with H5N1, the emergence of this virus genotype in dairy cattle poses a bit of a new risk because it can and has, in fact, affected both dairy cattle and domestic poultry. Requiring positive test reporting will help USDA better understand this disease, and testing before interstate movement will limit its spread. That's why we're taking this action today. It's important to remember that we've not found significant changes in the virus that would make it more transmissible to humans. Cases among humans in direct contact with affected animals are possible. Our partners at the U.S. Centers of Disease Control, CDC, believe that the current risk to the public remains low. Additionally, we continue to see affected cows, as I said earlier, recover with supportive care with little or no associated mortality. However, over the last several weeks, USDA has noted spread between cows within the same herd, spread from cows to poultry, spread between dairies associated with cattle movements, and cows without clinical signs that have tested positive. In fact, USDA has administered over 2,000 tests on samples taken from cattle over the course of the last several weeks, in addition to assisting FDA with its sampling of milk. On April 16th, USDA's microbiologist did identify a shift in the H5N1 sample from a cow in Kansas that could indicate that the virus has had an adaptation to mammals. CDC conducted further analysis of that specimen sequence, and their assessment is and remains a low risk overall. However, the novel movement of H5N1 between wild birds and dairy cows requires further testing in order for us to develop a critical understanding that would support any further course of action. The federal order we issued today, we believe, is critical to increasing that information that will become available to USDA. Additionally, the APHIS, the National Veterinary Services Laboratory, found H5N1 in a lung tissue sample from an asymptomatic cull dairy cow that originated from an affected herd and was sent to slaughter. The cull dairy cow was condemned by USDA's Food Safety Inspection Service during inspection, indicating that the system is working and did not enter the food supply. But these are examples of the nature of an evolving situation, which we need to treat and have been treating seriously with urgency, which is why we're issuing this federal order. We're committed, and this administration is committed, to ensuring the health and well-being of the public, of farmers and their families, and their farm workers, at the same time protecting the safety of the food supply, as well as the health and well-being of livestock. We will continue to collaborate with CDC as they work to protect the health of people, and with FDA as it works to ensure the safety of our milk supply. We're coordinating our technical expertise and our lab capacity. We're engaging with dairy producers and processors, veterinarians, state animal health officials, and departments of agriculture to continue to obtain, test, and analyze samples and to collect important epidemiological information. Information and data are absolutely key to bolstering farm and facility biosecurity that in turn will protect farmers, their families, farm workers, as well as farm animals. Let me just briefly talk specifically about the mandatory testing for interstate movement of dairy cattle, as well as the mandatory reporting, and then I'll be glad to take questions. The mandatory testing for interstate movement of dairy cattle involves, prior to interstate movement, dairy cattle will be required to receive a negative test for influenza A virus at an approved National Animal Health Laboratory Network laboratory. Owners of herds in which dairy cows test positive for interstate movement will be required to provide biological information, including animal movement tracing. And dairy cattle that does, in fact, move interstate will have to adhere to the conditions established by APHIS in the guidance that will be published tomorrow. These steps will be required beginning Monday, but we will focus primarily and specifically on lactating dairy cattle as we initiate this effort, because this has been the area of the dairy industry that has been the focus of activity over the last several weeks. While these requirements for other classes of dairy cattle will be based in the future on scientific factors concerning the virus and what its evolving risk profile might be. We will indicate to producers that we intend to pay for and cover the cost of testing animals at our National Animal Health Laboratory Network laboratory. So that's the mandatory reporting, or excuse me, the mandatory testing. The mandatory reporting really applies to all cattle. Laboratories and state veterinarians are required to report any positive influenza A finding in livestock to USDA APHIS so that we are able to obtain information as quickly as possible. As I say, the order is going to require that lactating dairy cattle be tested and determined to be HPAI and H5N1 free prior to interstate shipment. And we expect that this sampling will provide necessary information that will allow us to better understand the scope of the outbreak since it was focused primarily on lactating cattle. and hopefully over time limit the further spread by requiring any movement based on negative testing. Data from pre-movement testing is going to flow into the APHIS current testing stream. In essence, what will happen is the National Animal Health Laboratory Network will receive the samples, test the samples, and then we'll share any non-negative results and samples with our National Veterinary Service Lab, which in turn will do PCR and subsequent sequencing and post-sequencing work, as has been done in previous clinical cases. The data generated by private labs conducting tests will be monitored at the state by state animal health officials. Non-negative samples will be collected by those officials and in turn submitted to our National Animal Health Lab Network for testing. Then it will follow essentially the same pathway. If the state health officials receive a negative test result, well, then they are free to provide a certificate of veterinary inspection, which will allow for the interstate movement of those animals. If there's a positive test, then those state animal health officials won't be able to issue that inspection certificate, which will prohibit the affected animals from being moved until they've completed a 30-day waiting period and have been retested as negative. In turn, any positive test results will also involve working with us to obtain the EPI information and trace investigation necessary for us to make sure we have facts on hand in any positive case. We'll coordinate with CDC as we have during the course of the poultry outbreak. We have been working with CDC and providing information to CDC, which in turn allows them to do the work that they do in terms of public health and in terms of the health and safety of farmers and their workers. Let me just end by saying that once samples have been submitted to a lab, to our National Animal Health Laboratory Network, we expect the testing based on workload and standard process will take 1 to 3 days. If it's non-negative, it will go to the confirmatory test at the National Veterinary Service Lab, and that work usually takes and is completed within a 1 to 2 day period. Again, since testing is mandatory, APHIS intends to cover the cost of testing these animals. With that, I'll try to answer questions.
We will now turn it over to the moderator to turn it over for the question and answer session.
Yes, sir. If you would like to ask a question over the phone, please press star followed by 1. Please make sure your phone is unmuted and record your name and media outlet.
After the tone, please state your name and company followed by the pound sign.
Jeff Nally, Cromwell Ag.
Thank you.
Our first question comes from Steve Davies from AgriPulse. Your line is open.
Yes, thank you so much for holding this call. I just had two questions. I won't belabor them, though. The first one is I just wanted to be clear that this order, Mr. Secretary, applies initially just to lactating dairy cattle, not all dairy cattle. My other question was just, is there any concern or there's no issue with this order being implemented? My question goes to the fact that about 20 states have issued some type of import restrictions. This federal order, I assume, supersedes any of those state orders. Thanks.
So just to be clear about this, we've got two components to this rule, to this order. The mandatory testing for interstate movement impacts and involves dairy cattle. We are going to initially, and you'll see this guidance tomorrow, we're going to initially focus on lactating cows. It doesn't necessarily mean that the order is limited only to lactating cows, but it means that we'll start there because that is the place where we think we've seen the most intersection with the H5N1 and the most intersection with the movement of cattle that have resulted in the spread of this in other states. On the mandatory reporting side, it's important for us to get information about all cattle. So if there's a H5N1 finding in other cattle, we obviously will need to know about it as soon as possible. So that's the distinction in terms of interstate movement. States have the ability to regulate movement within their state borders. USDA authority of interstate. States, I suppose, can make the determination. We make the determination. You have to have a negative test. No indication of H5N1 in any cattle that you intend to have in interstate commerce. I suppose a state could make the determination on its own not to accept within its borders that cattle. We can't supersede a decision the state makes. But what we can do is say no movement of cattle from one state to another unless we're sure that we're not unless we're sure that that cattle is virus free.
Thank you.
And the whole point of this is we've seen movements result in spread. We've seen 8 poultry facilities now being impacted, sort of the reverse. Instead of wild birds being responsible initially for all of this and cattle, we're now seeing cow to cow, and we're also seeing cow to poultry facilities. So we just need to constrain movement of potentially infected cattle across state lines. Now, in order to do that, we have to test. And the reason we have to test is that it's not a circumstance where you can just look at the cow and say, well, the cow's exhibiting symptoms, therefore the cow has virus, therefore the cow can't move. The reality is we've had situations where we've tested asymptomatic herds only to find that they have virus, even though they have no symptoms. It's important and necessary for us. We've seen this evolving circumstance to impose this particular requirement in terms of mandatory testing for interstate movement and mandatory reporting for any positive influenza A finding.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Jeff Malley from Cromwell Ag. Your line is open.
Mr. Secretary, thanks for providing this. I'm just going to ask, as I have seen now this story come up on the midday news in the region, do you have any concern whatsoever about purchasing a white gallon or cheese or any other dairy product for the safety of yourself or your family?
Jeff, what I can tell you, and what I think the Food and Drug Administration would say as well, is that based on the information we currently have available, our commercial milk supply is safe for two reasons. One, pasteurization process works, and two, convinced that farmers are working with us to divert any and destroy any milk that may be coming from sick cows. So to answer your question specifically, I put cream in my coffee today and had absolutely no hesitation in doing so, and I had a grilled cheese sandwich for lunch.
To follow, if I could, the fact that the virus was found in a milk sample that had been pasteurized, how do we interpret that?
Well, just to be clear about this, it's not surprising that a virus could be found in a pasteurized sample. The question is whether or not the virus is live in that sample. All right? So, in other words, you can find particles of the virus after pasteurization, because pasteurization is not sterilization. It doesn't necessarily remove every evidence of a virus. But what it does is it kills the capacity of the virus to be infectious. And that's what you're concerned about. The concern is there live virus in that milk? And the pasteurization samples that have been done up to this point on milk that has contained virus has resulted in the virus not being live. They go through a rather complicated, multi-step process of taking a sample, identifying whether it has virus and what the virus load is, and then placing it in an egg, and it's complicated. It takes several days for the results to take place, and then you have your result, and the result for the tests that have been conducted is the virus is not live. That's the key. Does that explain it?
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Marsha Brown with Politico. Your line is open.
Hi, Mr. Secretary. Thank you for taking our questions today. Just two things. One, I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit more about kind of biosecurity on farms. You mentioned that we're not seeing cow-to-cow and cow-to-poultry transmission possibly. So is USDA, are you expecting to kind of issue recommendations for more biosecurity kind of initiatives on farms in addition to this kind of testing for interstate? And then my second question is, folks this morning talked a little bit about protecting farm workers, PPE, and farmers who are interacting with animals that may be positive. Can you talk a little bit about, like, how USDA might be working with other agencies to kind of make sure that folks who are exposed to animals are able to kind of take the precautions they might need?
We have... your first question on biosecurity and biosurveillance, APHIS has recently revised or upgraded its guidance and provided additional direction to producers, first of all, to be observant, to be able to observe any symptoms that would suggest that a cow or multiple cows might be virus infected, segregate those cows in a sick pen, make sure that they don't mix and mingle as best they can, and to make sure that there is a significant effort at focusing on biosecurity within the milk parlor itself to avoid, you know, access to spilled milk and things of that nature, make sure the equipment is being properly maintained. The second question... we've been working with CDC and FDA throughout this process in a collaborative way, understanding that our sort of our lane, if you will, is animal health and well-being. The FDA's lane is the safety of our milk supply. CDC obviously focused on the health and welfare of those who work on the farm, as well as public health. And to the extent that we can be helpful, we have made an effort to be so, which is a sharing of information that allows CDC to do its evaluation, working with state and local officials to help provide access to information and individuals who may be willing to work with CDC. As you know, it's a voluntary circumstance and situation, so CDC essentially has to be invited or there has to be an extension of a request. So we've been trying to facilitate as much of that as we possibly can, and we're working with state veterinarians and others who are known and respected out the countryside to basically try to enable that to happen. We're going to continue to do that. The more information we get, the better all of us can be in terms of making the decisions and judgments that we have to make within our respective lanes.
Can you share any of the groups that USDA is working with to kind of help get this information out to farmers and farm workers, the groups you said that are, you know, known and respected in the countryside?
Well, there's a list of organizations and groups that have been and are being notified of activities and actions. You know, we would start obviously with unions that represent farmers, the United Farm Workers, the UFCW. It's not just farm workers; it's also folks who are working in the processing plants as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, CDC basically has a list. I know the Department of Health and Human Services has been reaching out to groups as well that have contacts with and connections to groups. You know, this is a workforce that. You know, for understandable reasons, can be skittish in terms of access. So we want to work through organizations and entities that have a relationship that can be trusted by these workers And that's essentially probably the most important avenue, if you will.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Tom Polensek with Reuters. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks for holding the call. How did the milk with the H5N1 get into the commercial supply?
Well, cows were milked. Some asymptomatic cows were milked. The milk was delivered, and it was given to the processor. And then the processor pasteurized it at a temperature that, which basically, based on the tests that we've conducted, essentially results in the virus being present, but the virus not being live or a risk to people.
So the milk came from asymptomatic cows that were infected?
Right. The sick cows produced milk that was discolored, that was thicker than traditional milk, and so that milk was destroyed or dumped on site or destroyed in an appropriate manner, and those cows were segregated. But we do know that there were asymptomatic cows. Cows that had the virus but didn't necessarily exhibit any sign, and that milk didn't necessarily give any indication that it had had virus. But the key here, and again, it's really, really important for people to understand this, that it's not whether the milk had virus, it's the question of whether the virus is live. And we know from the testing that's been done of samples that had that were taken from affected herds, so we knew that there was a pretty significant load of virus. Tests were conducted, and the virus didn't survive the pasteurization.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our last question comes from Chuck Abbott with Fern. Your line is open.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary, for taking this call. Two things I've been wondering. Why is it that there are many times more beef cattle than there are dairy cattle, and yet no beef herds have been found infected? And also, in this, where does the pork industry fit into this campaign against bird flu? Pork, after all, is one of the three major sources of red meat.
Chuck, I tried to interrupt you just to basically make one more comment in the previous question, which is that it's important for folks to understand that when it comes to the safety of the milk supply, any additional information that would go deeper into all of this in terms of the testing and so forth, FDA is the sort of the purveyor of that information, and that's their lane. So they probably would be the best source for any further questions about that. As far as I think this is an evolving situation. This is why we have to have information, why we have to talk to producers, why we have to accumulate information from affected dairy herds to determine precisely the movements of the herds. The whole process of how the farm is operated so that we can determine what factors lead to potential transmission and what factors can prevent transmission. I think the circumstance with reference to the livestock and poultry, there were several facilities that had both poultry and livestock operations, and there could be a multitude of reasons why it occurred. It could be that individuals who worked in the milk parlor then went to the poultry facility and inadvertently spread. It could be a piece of equipment that was used in connection with the dairy herd that was also utilized in some way with the poultry. So there are a multitude of ways in which it could potentially be transmitted. That is precisely the reason why it's important for us to work with the farmers and producers to get information so we can analyze the various scenarios and see where the commonality is. And based on that, we can then provide further guidance, further assistance with producers so that they focus on biosecurity and to make sure that they are doing what they need to do, their workers are doing what they need to do to ensure that it doesn't spread. You know, I will say that, we part of the testing procedures that we have with feral swine is to test for this, and we'll continue to do that. And if and when it becomes necessary, we'll obviously work with the pork industry. But right now, our focus is on lactating cows because that's where the challenge first arose, and that's where that is the genesis of the complications that resulted from movement from one or two herds in Texas to other locations. That's why we've got the federal order. That's what we're trying to address. We're trying to get additional information. And over time, as we get more information, more testing, more samples, we obviously will continue to refine what we're doing. But this is a novel circumstance that that's not been confronted before. That's why there's a premium on knowledge and information and testing. Again, we've done over 2,000 samples. I mean, people say, you know, we weren't testing. That's all we were doing, as we should. And now based on that, and based on a couple of factors from that, we think it's appropriate to have the federal order in place, which is why we're doing this today and the guidance tomorrow and making it effective on Monday to give people enough time to make adjustments accordingly.
Thank you.
All right, folks, that concludes today's press call. Thanks again for joining, and thank you to Dr. Sitford for being on hand. Have a good afternoon, everyone.